Let's call the meeting to order, please. Have a roll call, please.
Do the Pledge of Allegiance first.
Oh, I'm really way ahead of myself. Dave, would you handle?
Everybody, please stand. Hand over heart, follow me in the pledge our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
She voted us all a pay raise.
Good. Doubled the salaries.
Outstanding. Now back to business. Do we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Commissioner Bentz?
Present.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Present.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Present.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Here.
Vice Chairman Moreno?
Here.
Chairperson Jack?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Could I have a motion to approve the agenda, please?
So moved.
Flip a coin. Commissioner Moreno, could I have a second? Commissioner Benz?
Second.
Roll call.
Vice Chairman Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
And Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. At this time, at public comment, portion of the meeting is set aside for anyone from the public that wants to speak on any item not on the agenda and that the Planning Commission has jurisdiction over. Seeing none, I'll close the public comment and move to the consent calendar. Do we have any items? Yes, we do. Does anyone want to discuss anything on the consent calendar?
Move approval.
We have an approval.
Second.
Oh, thank you. All those in favor? That was Commissioner Benz that moved and Commissioner Sturtevant that seconded.
Okay. Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Vice Chairman Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, we'll move into the public hearing portion. And is there any ex parte to? Okay. Kelly?
Good evening, Commissioners. This item before you is to amend 5 or 6 of the lots last year, approximately, to do some smaller models, which were selling better. When they actually went through and did the site grading details for lot 55 in particular, they found that that configuration didn't really work on the site. And so they came back for an amendment to switch it back to a larger home, which has a little bit different footprint and reduces some of the site grading and retaining walls for the site. So they're asking to switch it to the 2630, which is also an approved elevation and floor plan as part of the development. So these proposed amendments are fairly minor in nature. It's still in keeping with the development. It's one of the originally approved floor plans and elevations. They're just needing to switch it around a little bit, and they still meet all the conditions of the original development. As always, the commission has 3 alternatives, which are outlined in your staff report. And staff is recommending that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution before them and allow the minor amendment to switch out the model homes on lot 55. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions of staff? If not, could I have a motion, please? Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez. Oh, well. We will have those at times. Okay. At this time, I'd like to open it to the public. Anyone that has any comments on this particular item? See when no one approaching the lectern, I'll close the public and bring it back to the commission for a motion or discussion.
Mr. Chairperson, I'm ready to make a motion.
So, go ahead.
I move that we adopt resolution PC 2009-0022, approving an amendment to CUP 2002-0082 to allow an alternate model on lot 55 due to plan lot configuration conflict.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Moreno and Commissioner Sturdivant seconded.
Okay, Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay. This is probably where we're going to slow down.
Public Works has worked this year to update our five-year capital improvement program, and I'm going to present that to you tonight. So, summary, capital project consistency with general plan requirements. We'd like you to find that our 2009 update is in compliance with the general plan requirements. And our recommendation is to adopt the resolution. Now I'm going to go just a little bit over the capital program. I had a few questions this week, and I thought it might be good just to go over this information. I'm going to go over what are capital projects, who gets to choose the projects, the project funding, and finally consistency with the general plan. Capital projects basically are buildings, roads, sidewalks, streetlights, trees, bridges, anything we build that is a structure or maybe a road overlay project, rebuild a road, new bike lanes, those kind of things. Who gets to choose? Well, staff prepares recommendations based on city council direction. So, for instance, in the past, we've updated the city council with our road program. We have ranked our roads based on the quality of the road, type of pavement, et cetera. And from that, we'll make recommendations based on those priorities to the council. City council adopts, modifies, or cancels the project. Staff cannot do that on our own. We can make recommendations only. The dollars allocated by the city council, and they can only be reallocated by them, meaning staff does not have a latitude to spend the money on a project somewhere else in the city. We couldn't take, for instance, a zoo building we were supposed to build and build that and use that money to build a drainage project across town. Excuse me. So only the council can reallocate the dollars once they have been allocated. Project funding, we have a lot of funds. First and foremost, redevelopment funds. Streetscape comes to mind. That's probably one of the biggest funds we have right now. Drainage impact fees, those are collected. When someone comes in and does a development, we collect a drainage impact fee to do projects throughout the city. Circulation impact fees, we use those to build new roads or enlarge our roads, improve our roads. Proposition buy-ins, and we're currently in design with that project on San Gabriel Road. We have federal funding through the various bills that go through Congress for, say, transportation or other park-type projects. Finally, we have the wastewater fund. We have a fund that the wastewater ratepayers pay a certain amount to capital improvement projects to better the wastewater system in the city. And finally, the general fund. However, there's no general fund dollars in this budget. So there is no money coming from the general fund for any capital project in 2009-2011. I just want to mention one thing because it comes up quite a bit in the press, or I hear citizens talk about this or ask me questions. The funds you see on the screen have specific, they're earmarked for specific items. For instance, redevelopment funds can only be used in the redevelopment area. The grants we get are specific. So these can only be used for specific areas and could not be used to pay general wages of staff throughout the city, say in planning or in the city manager's office or in finance. So general plan consistency, we have a policy 15.2 requires the city to maintain an updated capital improvement plan. We're presenting that to you tonight in the staff report. And it says in there under Program 1, the Planning Commission shall annually review the CIP for consistency. Now, I don't want to go over all of these because they are in your staff report, but these are the plan policies that are in there. I want to make a correction. I didn't have this information when I wrote the staff report this year. As you know, developing the budget was a very long process. So I've provided that to you tonight as a memo for Resolution A. This is the actual update. So we're projected now from 2009 out 5 years, and those projects are shown on this sheet. So the recommendation is to adopt Resolution PC 2009-23, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, David. Kind of start off in general. Since the starting of the five-year program in 2007, in the report that you provided to us, there was a list of all basically that a project within the CIP has to be designed and constructed to preserve the rural character of the community. I think it was Finding 2. One of the programs that deals with the lake park and the zoo area, there's a 10-foot wall that's part of that project. What is it about the 10-foot wall that comports to the rural character of our community? Is there anything any measures that have been added to it to soften it at that location or anything like that?
I think you're referring to the zoo frontage wall.
Correct.
That wall is actually there's two issues with that wall. One is we have designed it to comply with the lake park design guidelines, so it incorporates the cobblestones and other craftsman style elements for that wall. And the second one is the zoo accreditation committee requires a minimum 8-foot wall for the outer perimeter of a zoo. So therefore, it's proposed to be 8-foot. That wall has to be 8-foot or the zoo will lose accreditation. So that, while it seems like it might be counter to a rural type environment or the character, our hands are kind of tied at that point. That wall has to be that high.
But the elements of the craftsman elements that have been added to it, I would say then start lending it to fit within the rural character of our community. So I'm satisfied with that. On the handout that you provided to us on Category C, the second item, Santa Rosa at Atascadero Lake Bridge Study. Is that the bridge that's at the upper inlet into the lake, the one that had been replaced? Page F11 of the handout that you gave us tonight.
No, that's this project refers to the actual automobile bridge. The pedestrian bridge that was replaced is not part of this study. So this will be looking into actually widening that bridge at that location.
Okay. And then on the following page on F12, miscellaneous projects, San Gabriel Routes to School project, how far will that Routes to School project extend? Will it go towards Highway 41 or back towards Atascadero Avenue? Or do you have any idea? To the north end of town. And, again, they're not within the five-year program, but I'm going to kind of question to each of the commissioners. Recently, when the consultant who prepared the Economic Development Strategy Program, he had talked about creating hubs along El Camino Real and try to create, points of interest. So I'm only questioning the fact that if we put medians in before we decide whether we want to do hubs or not, it might be premature. And that the medians might not fit with that design element of those hubs. So it's something for us to watch about as we go into the future. Thank you, David.
Any other commissioners with any questions? Okay.
Yes.
Commissioner Moreno?
Mr. Athey, this was one of the questions that I had, and I just wanted to ask it for the record. This came before the Planning Commission, as it does yearly, so last second meeting in June last year, and was approved. How significant are the changes from last year? How consistent is it with last year, would you say?
I think the plan is very consistent. We're moving forward with the projects that were identified but were not funded. So, for instance, the projects that weren't funded last year, like Santa Rosa Road, are now funded, so we're going to implement those plans. And we've now secured additional grant money through the ERA funding, American Recovery and Investment Act, from Congress to build Streetscape Phase 3. So we continue to move forward with those projects that have been identified by the City Council as priorities.
Any grant money to get downtown done? I mean, not the streetscape, I mean the actual, but that's another conversation. And I'm just curious, you said trees are part of capital projects, and then you went on to describe that it's anything that's, you know, built or constructed, which isn't a tree, so I was just kind of curious.
That's correct. We have a tree standard planting plan now, which includes a special type of soil and construction, and would also include in the downtown, for instance, tree grates. A little bit of sidewalk would have to be torn out because it's 15 feet total, 7 feet on either side of the tree, that has to be dug out and special rock and soil put back into place so that we can...
Capital improvement plan. So I see a list of projects under different categories, A through I. Are those all of the projects that form the five-year capital improvement plan?
For the next 2 years, yes. So there are additional projects that are desired but not funded that are part of that program but not listed here.
Okay. So these are all the projects for the next 2 years. Now, what is the update? I take it these projects have been scheduled for a while. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what exactly is the update component of these? That's what I'm not sure about.
Well, some projects have dropped off now because they're constructed. And so when those have dropped off, we've also added new projects to this list that's in Appendix A, not necessarily to the whole entire wish list of capital projects. So what we do every time we have a two-year budget come out, we update this list and council adopts these, or changes them, you know, whatever they wish to do in that two-year budget cycle.
So in adding projects to the list, you chose from projects that are that are part of the capital improvement plan that had not already been scheduled to be done during this period. Is that correct?
In some cases, yes.
So then a selection process was made on your part in doing that. Is that right?
Yes. Between all the, you know, between the departments, the city manager's office, public works, and finance, we worked together to kind of project out what we can do with the available funding we have, based on the direction that we get from council.
And then after Exhibit A, there's capital projects list of unfunded projects. So is that – well, that's unfunded projects. I guess my question is there an exhaustive list of all projects – that are part of the five-year capital plan? These materials. So.
Yes, that would be the projects that are listed currently here on this.
And in the back of the city budget is all of the unfunded wishful projects that they would like to have also, which we don't have before us.
Okay.
So, and I had a question about the zoo. I was wondering, is that city-owned or is that a private foundation, nonprofit? Or
the zoo is owned by the city of Atascadero.
It is?
Yes.
Okay. Also, since the budget does play an important role for all of us, I, as one commissioner, would like the city to provide the Planning Commission with a city budget and the Redevelopment Agency budget so that we can be an extra pair of eyes in the future to see if some of these things are coming along and maybe raise a question once in a while about what's happening with it and that. So I'd like to request that that I be given one, but the rest of the commissioners, if they wish to have it, they could express their own views on it. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other commissioners? Warren, is that feasible, or how would we go about doing something like that?
Well, historically, we haven't provided the commission with copies of the city budget. It is public information. It's available for the Planning Commission to review, but we haven't distributed copies. I could check with the city manager's office and the city council and find out if that's something they'd be interested in. Mainly the reason we don't do it is not that we don't want that information given to the Planning Commission, but that is somewhat beyond the role of the Planning Commission. Generally, you're dealing with zoning and general plan issues. Budget issues are taken more by the legislative body, which is the City Council. So I think it's more just to clarify the division of labor, not that the information is not available to the Commission, but it is somewhat beyond what your scope of responsibilities are. But I can check and see, you know, what the best way to provide that information is.
Is any of that information currently online? I have not looked for it.
Let me check. I'll check the website right now. I know they've tried to, but with all the tables and stuff, sometimes it tends to be somewhat hard to get posted online. But let me see if they got it up this year.
Okay. Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, Mr. Athey. Now that these projects are all identified and funded, what is the process for them actually?
Come up with plans and specs, specifications, and an estimate of cost. So the plans will be developed basically to stay within our budget, and then from there we'll go to construction, hire a contractor. That process, depending on how complicated the project is, for instance, streetscape could take a year or more, because there's a lot of in-between steps in there that we have to do. Maybe, for instance, a public meeting. I'm thinking in terms now of San Gabriel Safe Routes to School. Or we have to work with various landowners along the project route, which we often do with paving projects and road widening projects. So it could be as short as a couple weeks for an easy project, something less, say, than $30,000. Once we go over $125,000, we get into a formal project. There's a lot more legal requirements. We have 30-day notices for bidding, we have formal process for awarding the bid, that kind of thing. So it could take anywhere from, you know, weeks to years, just depending on how complex the project is and how much, you know, citizen and council input we need on it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me, Mr. Athey, and I'm not sure that whether this should be directed to you or to Director Frace. You say staff ranks the projects. Now, who are we referring to, more from an educational standpoint? Who on staff ranks these and pulls these together, and does it vary by the type of project that's being reviewed, or is it a standard committee, or how does it work?
We have no real standing committee, but we work with the city manager's office real closely. It'd be the public works director, city manager, myself, capital projects engineer, our the other folks in operations and public works, and we work together to find, you know, to fine tune and figure out how fast we can go on a project. What are the stumbling blocks on a project, and then rank those. Say a project is more is desired more by the community and the city council, then those projects may get ranked higher on the list. So there's a lot of factors that go into that, and it's basically the city manager's office and public works.
Ends up directing people on how to get to the zoo or the park in the next 5 years. There's no funds. It's not going to be done.
That's probably a mistake, a typo on my part. There is funding for the Lake Park frontage improvements and the zoo frontage improvements and the signs that go with it. And we are working with the stakeholders, the veterans group, and Lake Park Homeowners Association and those folks to do that project right currently.
Okay.
So that would be additive to this list?
That project should be on
where?
It's under Category F.
Okay, yes, correct. Category F is okay. The middle project.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other? Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, David. Could you possibly clarify some of the about the road improvements? I mean, we have the dubious honor of having the most miles of road in the community, in the county, with respect to the incorporated areas. And for the other commissioners that kind of follow, I mean, obviously certain roads have higher uses than others. And so the repaving of those sometimes will come up quicker than other roads that are out in the back hinder. And so isn't there a priority list on the roads of which ones have or have more priority than others in our community?
That's correct. Steve Kahn, when he was the Public Works Director, came up with a road ranking system for all the roads in Atascadero that the city maintains. And periodically, Public Works will update the council with that list and provide the council with Public Works recommendations on which roads should be paved or come up in the next cycle for paving when we do get the money.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that this is somewhat important in the sense that although there is a committee that kind of puts together what programs are going to be looked at least with respect to roads, there isn't as much of a wish list, let's just say. There is this ranking that has been set up, and staff follows that ranking when they identify the projects themselves.
Very good. Anyone else? Would anyone from the public care to make any comments? Or seeing none, bring it back to the commission. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Benz motion and seconded by Commissioner Colomarino. Any discussion? Or can we have a vote, please?
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay. That takes us to the next staff report on the Title IX zoning text update strategy. Director Frace?
Yes, thank you. Before I get to that item, I'm just going to follow up on Commissioner Benz's question about the budget. I did check online. The current, and we do two-year budgets here, the current budget is online. If you go to Administrative Services, it's right there under their pull-down. The next budget will be on the next council agenda, which is next Tuesday. That agenda is not posted right now, but it should be posted by tomorrow morning. So I expect that the new budget will be available online tomorrow as well. So that's probably your best, easiest, quickest way to get access to the budget. So with that,
thank you.
You're welcome. We'll move on to our next item. And what this is more kind of a study session overview that staff wanted to present to the Planning Commission about a couple programs we're working on relating to updating the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance that we have, a number of the sections are fairly old and were carried over from when the city was incorporated from the county back in 79-80. So some of our uses are somewhat antiquated. They kind of reflect more of an industrial society than kind of the current informational type society that we live in. So some of those uses need to be updated. The City Council, through their strategic planning exercises, have identified a number of sections of the zoning ordinance that need to be looked at and considered for updating. What we're proposing at a staff level and what we're doing tonight is giving you an overview of what we think some of the big issues are and some of the approaches. We're not looking to fix anything tonight. We just want to brief the commission on what the issues are, get everybody kind of thinking about this. These issues are going to come back to the commission in a number of different sessions, but smaller. We think we can move on that more quickly. So that's going to be the first thing we're going to be talking about, and Kelly and Callie will go into this in more detail. And then the second phase will be a broader look at more of the zoning, especially in our commercial and industrial zones, where we'll look at the uses and how we can tailor that zoning ordinance to be as business-friendly and as efficient as possible. So that's just kind of my little overview commercial. Kelly and Callie are going to actually do all the hard work, so I'll turn it over to them.
Thank you.
So what we thought we'd do is start out by just kind of giving you an overview of the zoning ordinance, what its purpose is, how we do zone text changes, what the planning commissioner's role is. We've kind of been doing these little training sessions with the planning commission, so we thought this would be a good time to kind of brief you guys on zoning. The municipal code has the planning and zoning ordinance identified as Title IX, and so that's the blue planning and zoning ordinance that you guys would all have and refer to when we look at different uses. The planning and zoning ordinance is designed to establish zoning regulations. We're really trying to promote public health, safety, and welfare. That's the primary goal of the planning and zoning ordinance. It provides a regulatory structure for the development of land uses, and the primary objective of this is to support the general plan. So everything in the zoning ordinance has to be consistent with the general plan. It also is designed to provide appropriate standards for development. So this is really done to minimize adverse effects on neighboring residents. So we're looking at uses and having development standards and uses that are consistent being next to each other. We're also looking to protect and enhance the unique and significant natural, historic, and cultural and scenic resources within the city. So it's really protecting the city's character and trying to enhance that through the zoning ordinance. So there's a number of things that the zoning ordinance is specific about, and those include the uses, density, building heights, setbacks, and development standards. So we're looking at what types of activities are allowed next to each other. Density really deals with anything. We're looking at low density, such as single family out in the, when we get further back in the hills, we look at very low density uses, higher density towards the center of the city. Setbacks really are used to control the basically the amount of space that you can develop on a property. So some properties, such as residential properties, will have setbacks between properties. The definitions, and then each one of those uses that's identified in the definitions is linked to a particular zone. So to go through this, it's explained in detail in your staff report, but we'll give you just a brief overview tonight. What we're looking at are commercial, agricultural, residential, downtown, industrial, and then miscellaneous zoning districts. And it's probably easiest if we explain that just on the zoning map. We're usually looking at more commercial zoning districts towards the center of the city, along El Camino Real and along Mora Road. And those are going to be broken up, as it was shown in your staff report, into commercial neighborhood, which are usually close to more of the residential areas. We've got commercial professional, which is primarily office uses. Commercial retail is pretty broad. It really involves a wide range of commercial uses. Commercial service tends to be a little bit more towards service like auto, maybe even light manufacturing uses. Commercial tourist is primarily along Highway 101, especially at the freeway exits and entrances. And then we also have commercial park, and that tends to be towards the north end of the city along El Camino Real. And that's really large lot commercial properties, kind of business park type areas. We also have the downtown zoning districts. Those are primarily downtown commercial. We see most of that. And then downtown office borders the rest of that. So that's more of your small-scale retail things that you would want to be just walking around downtown. Lots of eateries allows that sort of uses. Let's see. Industrial zoning districts, we see a lot more down towards Traffic Way. And those are industrial park and industrial. There's also a number of public and recreational zones throughout El Camino and Moore Road and Traffic Way. So they're kind of dispersed throughout. Our residential uses are broken up so that we have large lot residential suburban towards the outskirts of the city, and then the lots get smaller as we get closer towards the center of the city. So we have residential single family, limited single family, and then when we get down towards the commercial areas, we see a lot more high density. So that about summarizes all the different zoning districts. We do also have an agricultural zone, but we don't actually have a lot of agricultural properties throughout the city. Custom PDs, in which specific standards have been developed for that particular lot. And when we have a PD overlay, it basically creates development standards which are different than the underlying zone. So we're looking at increasing possibly density, or setbacks might be different, or other development standards might be different through the PD overlay zone. So then we'll look at the approval process when we're looking at different uses. So say if somebody came into the city and they wanted to open a new business, then they would be looking to see if they're either an allowable, a conditional, an administrative use, or just not allowed within the particular zone. So all uses would be classified into one of these categories. Allowable uses are identified in each zone in Chapter 3 of your zoning ordinance. And they're basically allowed by right. They're just the zoning ordinance says you can go ahead and open up one of these businesses or start one of these uses on these properties. And then the special uses for any particular use would be identified in Chapter 6. So there's another chapter of the ordinance that kind of is more specific about special uses. So if there's specific minimum lot sizes or setbacks or other things like that that need to be considered for a specific use. The zoning ordinance also talks about conditional uses. Now, conditional uses are the ones that come before Planning Commission for approval. These are a discretionary approval, so it requires public noticing of all the neighbors, and then the Planning Commission considers if it's compatible with the neighborhood. So for conditional uses, they're going to either be identified in the list by the particular zone, or they would also be multifamily residential units that are greater than 12 units, or non-residential developments that are greater than 10,000 square feet. There's a third type of zoning approval that we call the administrative use permit. And these are things that really don't quite trigger a Planning Commission hearing. They're not that intensive, but they do need some type of public noticing and public review to make sure that they're going to be compatible. So what we do is a public hearing at the city. The Community Development Department Hearing Officer, which is our director, listens to public testimony and holds the hearing, and then is able to decide if the use is compatible with the neighborhood. And in this case, business licenses and build the ordinance itself, or a zoning map amendment to change the zoning designation of a property. So to get into that a little bit more, the main thing that we're looking at when we're talking about a zone text or a zoning map amendment is that the city council must find that it's a public necessity, convenience, or welfare require the amendment. So it has to be for the good of the community to make a zone change or a zoning map amendment. To go through the process of the zone text change or the zoning map change, we would first hold public workshops, and we do these preliminary sessions with Planning Commission and City Council. And that's to receive input from the public so that our staff has all the information. We then, our staff would draft the text amendments and then bring it before Planning Commission at a public hearing, who would recommend it to City Council or send it back to staff for additional additional amendments. And then the City Council then holds a hearing. The City Council will actually go through two different hearings to approve the zone change. So it's not just the first hearing. It would then come back at a second hearing for the final adoption. And now Kelly's going to go ahead and tell you about some of the zoning updates that we're planning on starting.
So as Warren mentioned earlier, a lot of our zoning ordinance was sort of taken, the framework from it was taken from the original county zoning ordinance when we incorporated in 1979. And the first zoning ordinance was actually adopted in 1983 because it is kind of a lengthy process to put that all together. We have done minor amendments. Some have been a little bit more major, but we've never done sort of a more comprehensive look at our zoning ordinance in terms of updating uses, definitions, and those sorts of things. A lot of times we kind of pick and choose around the ordinance, you know, based on something that comes up at that moment. But we've never really done a full review of a lot of the uses and zoning designations within that. Because of that, a lot of our definitions are outdated. Some modern uses aren't even identified, so it's not even that our definitions are kind of vague and we're not sure where to put them. It's that some of them you can't put anywhere within our current uses. And then there's also conflicts and inconsistencies throughout our zoning ordinance. Some definitions overlap, some are a little bit too precise and exclude some flexibility to allow for some unique uses that may come along. Some are too general and some are repetitive. And so that the public, when they read the code, can know exactly what's required of them and what's allowed. We're looking to consolidate some land uses. I think we, for example, have 10 or 11 different industrial manufacturing definitions, depending on what you're manufacturing, and they all tend to be allowed in the same zone. So there's some uses like that that can be consolidated to sort of help people understand where their use falls into. And then, as I mentioned, update the code with some uses that are currently not listed in there that we do want to allow. So some of the more major updates, which is what we're doing as part of this sort of phase one and phase two as it stands right now, will be analyzed through public workshops so that we can get their input, especially when it comes to newer uses or uses that maybe, you know, weren't allowed before. We're looking to expand into residential zones where they could have some impacts. And then, of course, discussions with the Planning Commission and City Council. So phase one of the zoning code update is going to focus on boutique events. And when you start opening one code section, you find that it links to multiple others. So these are sort of the three major ones that we've combined for the first phase one, because they kind of all touch each other once you start going through the code sections. So boutique events would include things like adding vacation rentals, which is not currently defined in our code at all, and then updating bed and breakfast type definitions so that it doesn't overlap with vacation rentals and there's clarity between the two. We currently have a temporary events section that's incredibly vague and not really working for what we see a lot of people try and come forward for. So we're trying to turn basically those temporary events into the full boutique event ordinance as a more comprehensive ordinance that is more useful. And then annual community events. We have a lot of those, and our code doesn't really reference those at all. And so we want to make sure that the rules for those are kind of clear and known and the impacts are analyzed appropriately. And then within boutique events, because some of these are commercial events, property rentals or people coming to the property for a retail sales event or things of that nature, it touches our home occupation section. So as part of phase one, we're looking to update our home occupation section, which will be more than sort of just the boutique events, because we're going to go through comprehensively and do it all together. But a lot of it is because the boutique events overlaps with some of the home occupation standards. And then agricultural uses, because we're seeing a lot of boutique events as for non-commercial events in a residential area, which potentially, when you read it by the code, technically includes having people over for a barbecue at your house. So we need some clarification on that, and we need to make sure that we're not being too restrictive and that our code is more flexible. So what we're going to do is add a new land use definition for boutique events which will include a variety of events and, you know, similar events, outdoor festivals, weddings, fundraisers, theater productions, art shows, concerts, things of that nature, or anything similar. And then once we define that, we can have certain standards associated with that that will help us understand the impacts and address those appropriately. So some of those standards might include the sizes of events, how often events are held, and what types of, what level of permit or approvals would be needed. As Callie discussed, there's uses that are allowed, there's an administrative use permit process, and there's a conditional use permit process. And so understanding the levels of impacts, we can appropriately address those and figure out what type of requirements they would fall under. Vacation rentals is something that's sort of become popular in the city. We've actually called a number of surrounding cities, and they're not addressed in their code either, and currently they don't know how to deal with them. But we do have a number of vacation rentals within the city and a number of people interested in doing that. So again, that's something that we have a zoning administrator policy on because our code is very vague. But you really need to codify that so that the rules are solid and understandable to everybody that needs to view them. So currently, our policy allows you to rent out a single-family residence to only one group of people for less than 30 days as a vacation rental. You would still pay TOT tax as part of that because it is a less than 30-day rental. And so we've developed some standards, but those really need to be codified. And then there's sort of some overlap with bed and breakfast and vacation rentals because it's not clearly defined. So we need to go through our bed and breakfast definition and sort of clarify that and make sure that they don't overlap or conflict in any way. And then again, with agricultural uses, as Callie mentioned, a lot of our residential, single-family, residential, suburban parcels are larger lots. A lot of people are interested in planting wineries or orchards, olive trees, things of that nature, which be art craft production, which is very limiting to people that might want to do a vacation rental business or grow an agricultural product on their property and have some festivals a couple times a year to sell that product or have art shows associated with that. So we need to update that as well. And some of the issues that surround home occupations that the commission would need to be aware of when the ordinance comes forward are number of employees, clients, parking, vehicles, things of that nature that are not really addressed because we don't allow people to come to people's homes currently. So phase one is the boutique events ordinance as well as home occupations and agricultural uses. We actually have a public workshop that's scheduled for June 18th, which is a Thursday evening. So the public is welcome to attend that event. It's not really an event for the Planning Commission. We're hoping to sort of separate public comment and then Planning Commission and City Council so that we can have it better organized. But we did hand out the flyer so that you're aware of that. And if anybody in the community asks, you can pass along that information. And then the next step would be some draft code text potentially coming before the Planning Commission and Council for their opinions, depending on our feedback at the public workshop. And then it would come forward for final adoption through the regular process at Planning Commission and City Council. And we hope to get that done by later this summer. So we kind of see how the process goes, how much input there is, how much work still needs to be done, how many ideas are out there in the public, and then go from there. Phase two, which would be mostly the definitions and looking at the land use categories, would hopefully go for a public workshop in late 2009 and would follow that process after that. So that's our presentation. As Warren said, this is kind of mostly informational to get you primed for what's coming before you. There were some attachments included in the staff report, which outlined some of our current zoning districts and all the uses that were allowed and all the definitions. So you can definitely start looking at that because it's probably not something that you can do in one staff report cycle in about 4 days. So we'd like you to start looking at those and sort of see anything that pops up that you're looking at that's not quite making sense or, you know, any directions that we kind of need to go. And as we move forward through this process, you'll be able to use that to sort of help staff figure out which direction we need to go in and what our updates need to include. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. Very good. Before
I open to that, so we understand that this process is going to be a little bit fluid, that it is a more complicated process than we usually do with our minor amendments, and it may require more even Planning Commission or Council meetings than just one or two. So we are open to additional public input if that's necessary.
Okay, thank you. One other question. I'm at a loss when I was going through this. There's a one sheet in here with the item 1 through 27. It doesn't have a title on it other than zoning matrix, and I was just curious how that worked with everything else that you put in our packets.
What that page is actually going to do is specify particular notes in the zoning ordinance. So if you go through Chapter 3, sometimes after particular uses, it'll say things like only allowed in historic home or in, like in a colony house or use limited to 2,500 square feet within the zone. So those different numbers are shown in the matrix, and then you can go to that last page to identify those.
Okay, thank you. That was just before the zoning matrix of... Oh, one other comment here. On your zoning matrix that you gave us, it says page 1 of 7 on every page.
Whoops.
We'll fix that up. Heather, if you were looking for it, it was page 63 of the staff report. And then, for example, on page 62, if you're looking at vehicle equipment and storage, all the way towards the right-hand side, it says CUP and then note 18. So that's how those correspond to those notes.
This matrix is going to be very helpful, I think, to all of us, because taking that one book and then boiling it down so we've got a reference piece kind of thing here that we can keep with us. I'm going to find it very beneficial as we go forward.
I think Callie spent quite a few months putting that together for us. So,
thank you, Callie. Appreciate it. Now, any questions? Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes. In general, about the public workshop, is it noticed in such a way that if planning commissioners...
feeding the purpose of what we're trying to achieve. So we're going to encourage the commission not to attend. Obviously, three or fewer can attend, but we definitely want to avoid having quorums because then it changes the whole nature of the meeting.
Will there be any type of publication of the meeting that we could watch it online, or will it be televised? Or?
No. Just there's a lot of logistics and problems and costs associated with that. So what we'll do, these are workshops. Staff will be there. We'll be hosting the workshops, and we'll be running the participants through different exercises to try to gather what their key issues are. And that we will then package up. And when we come back to the Planning Commission with any drafts, we'll definitely provide information in terms of what came out of the workshops so that you can see how those issues were raised and how they were dealt with in whatever we're proposing in drafts.
Will there be a recording of the critical moments or something that we can listen to so we can hear the words themselves without having to have it come through your heads and your hands? And
no.
Okay.
The plan is not to do that, just because once we get into doing audio, then you have to have microphones for everybody in the room. It quickly gets very complicated. Because we're not even planning on being in this room. We're going to be in another room that doesn't have any setups. So it's just the technical reasons we don't do that. Not that it's not a good idea. It's just cumbersome.
Okay, well, thank you. So I can get this straight. For instance, the Lavender Farm on San Gabriel, when they have an event on their land, they have first a home occupation permit that allows for them to sell lavender products from their property. And then they have a temporary permit under the current zoning code that would allow for them to have a festival, Is that how it's worked presently?
I don't know the specifics of that particular business in terms of what their home occupation license might say or anything of that nature. Currently you can have a home occupation and they can run their office for their lavender product sales and those sorts of things out of their home, so that's not really an issue. Currently, temporary events are listed as an allowed use in the residential zone, and they have to be non-commercial in nature, so they can't be a retail sales event or anything like that.
But that could be a fundraising event. I mean, I recall, I don't know when, I mean, there was actually, so as we get into the boutique events, are we going to establish some type of thresholds or something that people know a decibel level has to be at this point or so on, or how much could be leaving the property? And the other, kind of in the same vein, when we start taking uses that have been established for private use, and now we're starting to invite the public onto those things, are we going to have standards that address ADA needs, parking needs, emergency response needs, those type of things? Because, again, typically a house isn't the same, obviously, as a commercial facility, and the needs are different for both those uses.
In terms of the accessibility requirements and the fire access, that will definitely be part of our review. We're waiting sort of to hear from the public through the workshops about what level of events and what types would be appropriate in residential neighborhoods, and then kind of go from there to establish any sort of development standards in that Chapter 6 that Callie discussed. And so that those will have to be addressed, based on the nature of the events. But we're kind of not to that detailed level as of yet. Currently, for temporary events, it does provide for emergency access currently and has a 3 or 4 standards where you're required, if you have a temporary event on your property, say your daughter's getting married in your backyard, you are required to provide parking currently. And have emergency access in terms of the width of access way. It's just that we don't require a permit for it, so it's kind of on the honor system to a certain degree. Here's our standards, please follow them, but we don't have a process to come check for that.
And from what I heard you say, it sounds like we're going to have, again, administrative permit, let's say a one-time use, a minor type use. It might be categorically exempt. Whereas a conditional use, we might have to actually issue a mitigated neg deck or those type of things. And then we'll be issuing permits for, again, a one-time event or, for instance, a facility or a piece of property wants to have 10 weddings a year and 3 nonprofit events or whatever. And so there could be somewhat of an annual permit, a conditional permit that they could have this throughout that period.
Those are all something that we're hoping to glean out of the public workshops and the Planning Commission and City Council workshops, is what levels of events would trigger different and those sorts of things in residential zones. And that was a fairly contentious ordinance that was adopted, and it was adopted recently. So we probably won't necessarily touch that again if the public really felt there was a need to add spectator-type facilities to those in residential zones. We could certainly look at that, but that's not something staff was currently considering or thinking of.
I was looking at the agricultural properties as an area that it might be, and again, that was somewhat my comment. I don't know where the parcels are, how large they are, or how many we have. And just as question comment, when we have a parade, Colony Days Parade, is that a temporary permit that the city applies for?
There's no permit required for temporary events as long as they're non-commercial, and there's an exemption in there for events that are open to the public on public land. So currently that falls under that sentence in our zoning ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Commissioner Moreno?
First of all, I'm very glad you're doing this. This is fantastic. And I'm curious, what has happened in the past? Obviously, council's doing this because there seems to be a necessity for it. So I'm curious, what's happened in the past? Have people come and said, hey, we want to do this, and it's just taken a lot of time and rigmarole to get it going? Or have a lot of people been just turned away saying they can't do it?
Unfortunately, based on our code, a lot of people have been turned away saying that you can't do it. sort of because of that non-commercial status in there, and then having no definition for what a commercial event versus a non-commercial event means, it's been very difficult in terms of temporary events. And then a lot of people view temporary events as something that just would be allowed on their property, and so a lot of people are doing things, you know, regardless of our small section in our code, because it is so vague, and they can't get very solid answers when they call. So unfortunately, you know, a lot of people that call, we kind of give them our code section, which is very vague, and they don't know what to make of it, and sometimes we don't either.
Okay. And then also, you talked about the allowable uses for home, and in there, would something along the lines of, once it's changed, something along the lines of, say, a massage therapist who wants to have a room in his or her home, manicure, pedicure, that type of business?
We are currently looking into that. We have historically allowed some hairdresser type establishments to be as home occupations. Those kind of are all grandfathered in because our code is a little bit iffy on that.
Based on my own business experience, it's always helpful to see what other businesses, or in this case, other cities have done. Have you talked to other cities that have upgraded their zoning and have addressed these type of situations, because I'm sure that these aren't unique to our city, and if this was available, I think it would help us add some things that perhaps we didn't think of, or solve some problems that other people have spent a great deal of time and money and effort to solve. For instance, if at a workshop, you could say, well, here's how Aurora Grandy attacked this problem, or here's how Paso Robles handled the situation. I think it would be very helpful.
Yeah, part of our background research has included looking to other cities' codes. We have looked to sort of the local cities and the county, and a lot of theirs, they're in the same situation. I know Paso's dealing with wedding events at wineries, and so is the county, and they're actually taking a different direction and trying to not allow them in those zones. So we are a little bit unique in terms of our semi-large parcels. We're not as large as some of those Paso or county winery parcels, and so we do have some uniqueness there. We have looked at some of Napa counties and places that have agricultural flair, and that was part of our research. So we've definitely tried to use as much from other people as we can.
Because this whole area of home occupation, I think, has just changed dramatically in the last decade or so. And I would hope that the end result of this would make it a bit more flexible for people. Also, if more people knew they could come in and 20 minutes later get a permit and plunk down $10 or $20 fee, I think it would create more income for the city. Is that one of the goals here?
I know we're looking at boutique events as definitely becoming a tourist draw and having an economic component just in terms of sales and things like that. We don't know the permitting levels yet or any costs associated with that.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Thank you. I first of all want to remark that this seems like a very valuable and useful exercise. The idea of updating the language, same experience as a planning commissioner. And as a new planning commissioner, I'm particularly sensitive to all of the planning commission speak that we're engaged in. And it concerns me because I think this should not be something for the initiated. We're doing the public's business, and they ought to be able to understand what we're talking about. And I've been working hard at trying to figure out some of the terminology myself over a few months. And I hope that in revising the language of the municipal code, we can try to bring some of the terminology down to earth. For example, why do we have to talk about zoning map amendments? I now know what we're talking about when we say that, but isn't there a more down-to-earth way of saying something like an additional allowed use amendment or something that people who are not among the initiated can understand, so that when we're doing the public's business, they'll know what we're doing?
jargon is very exclusionary, and it's sometimes unavoidable. As one who's dealt with it for so long, I realize that it is unavoidable to a certain extent, and that's why I say I'm glad I'm that this is coming up now when I'm and so many of us are new planning commissioners. Before we're totally immersed in our own language and we're just talking to each other in ways that only we can understand. So I think this is a very good endeavor, and as someone who's played around with legal drafting for a long time, I offer my services to the extent that you can take advantage of a planning commissioner's services in an undertaking like this. I'd be happy to lend a hand. Getting to this question on the boutique, I guess that's the first thing that comes to my mind, is that nomenclature, this boutique event. Is that a term of art in planning? Is this something that's used outside of Atascadero?
It's sort of what the term came up with during this City Council strategic planning session as one of their priorities. I think what they were trying to sort of infer with that particular goal is events that would be compatible in residential areas that would sort of have that tourist draw and uniqueness to it, and so they felt that that was the appropriate title. And for the most part, it seems to fit with the intent of, I think, where we're trying to go with the code.
Well, I just raise that because I've never heard the term before, boutique event, and it's the first time I heard it, I thought it was a little unusual, for whatever that's worth. If there's another term to consider, as long as we're looking at terminology, maybe that's one to look at. Then the next thing is, are there now a number of venues where these kinds of boutique events, for want of a better term, are being held in Atascadero? Mm-hmm.
I believe there are a number of venues, just from what you see in the newspaper and advertising-wise for community events. It seems like there are some residential properties out there that are hosting some events. I know there's large house concert series that rotate houses throughout multiple communities all over the state of California. So there are those events out there, and we're hoping to sort of capture those and sort of assist people in terms of knowing what the requirements are, and for people that are small and fit in with the residential neighborhood, we're hoping they can just sort of be allowed and just understand maybe what their limitations are in terms of being neighborly.
So what I'm trying to get at is, then there is some, to your knowledge, there is some supply of boutique event venues in Atascadero right now.
There currently are, and we have over the last year and a half received a lot of phone calls and requests about some additional ones and people wanting to do things on their properties.
And then that goes to the next point I wanted to bring up. Is there a demand for boutique events in Atascadero, to your knowledge?
There seems to be, just based on the number of requests that we get to host these kind of events. And I know some of our annual community events, the studio art tour that happens throughout the entire county, and some of the annual garden tours that the Atascadero Mutual Water Company helps hold, those events have been growing in popularity year after year. So there seems to be sort of a community want for these types of events.
If somebody wanted to build a little, let's say, band shell on their property and had these kind of events, would something like that fall into this category, to your understanding?
That would be something that would sort of need to be addressed within the code in terms of structures for, permanent structures for boutique events and things of that nature. So that's something we hope to hear from the neighbors and the Planning Commission and Council about, the particulars of those and what...
This area would seem to lend itself to that. Has there been anything like that showing up in Atascadero yet? Is there a possibility of that fitting in again in what we're talking about here?
We don't know that there's any of those that actually exist today. We know that there's some interest in doing things similar to that.
And finally, I just want to ask whether this matrix is something that is available generally to the public. It seems like a very valuable document, and I really want to applaud the effort to put this thing together. I think the public could benefit from it, from having access to it, too.
I don't believe it's currently posted on our website, other than the fact that you could go to tonight's staff report and pull it up there. And I'm not sure there's a place to post it on the website, so we'll definitely look into that. But it is just a summary of our existing codes, so it is something that could easily be public record and handed out.
Yeah, it's such a clear summary and user-friendly summary that it's a nice thing to have.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes. I look at this as an opportunity for this commission and city staff and city council to better serve the needs of the population of our community, and that's what I'm looking forward to. I think it's an exciting project. I think you're going to get a lot of public input, and the more public input, the better decision that we'll all make. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm happy to be part of it, and I'll most certainly try to promote it. Thank you.
Anyone else? I've got a question and a comment on the AUPs. What's currently, how is it decided that something falls under the AUP, the administrative process, as opposed to something that would come to the Planning Commission?
So while the allowable uses and conditionally allowed uses are kind of listed under each zoning district, administrative use permit process generally shows up in code sections such as the development standards, where maybe you need a minor adjustment to a setback because you have a really sloped lot and you want to move your garage forward, sort of things of that nature. So it is specifically called out for each code section that it's applicable to. It says, you know, if you want to reduce your setback for your garage because you have a sloping lot, here's the standards, and you have to go through the administrative use permit process. So it's because they're more minor in nature, they're generally attached to minor amendments to
anything. If you got enough from the commission, or what I'd like to do then is open it up to the public if anyone would like to make any comments. Now would be the appropriate time.
The other 50% of the audience here and I had to negotiate who was going to go first. My name is David Broadwater. I wanted to thank the staff and Ms. Taylor and Gleason for their staff report and their assistance. Callie's over the phone and directing me and answering some questions about this. I do think this is something that, as some of the commissioners have said, has a potential to increase income, transit occupancy tax, other methods of funding for the city through event centers like this that have been discussed for a while. Have the potential for really affecting neighborhoods throughout our communities, as these kind of home occupations or other event, boutique events, or whatever they're going to be called, spread throughout neighborhoods in the city. And so I think as more and more people in the community find out about what's being proposed here, I think more and more the public will become interested and concerned about what the economic benefits are going to be, whether it's going to affect an increased tourism, tourist draw, or income from the city, but also on direct impacts on people's neighborhoods that they live in. And for that reason, I would like to point out that although Mr. Frey said definitively, apparently, that the workshop that's been scheduled is not going to be televised or webcast or recorded in any way, and I'm assuming that that is a decision that's been made by the city manager. Is that correct?
No, that's just been community development staff, and that's just because our process is not to do that.
I would like to reiterate that the current contract between the city, that is the city council and AGP Video, who do these things, leaves the discretion as to whether or not meetings such as this of public importance are up to the city council or the city manager, that these meetings do get recorded, at least audio, but preferably televised and webcast as well, because of the potential economic and neighborhood impacts of the activities that are being discussed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broadwater. Anyone else? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Ward?
Yes, I have a comment on the subject of recording work sessions. It's been my experience that that just kills sort of the free spirit and an exchange of getting things done, and everybody comes up with an agenda and wants to make a speech. These are work sessions to get things done. And I think it's very important that people express their opinions to each other without having it blasted over television, because it just inhibits the whole process of having a work session. And I want to emphasize the object is to get some things done. And I just think it's counterproductive to have it recorded and televised and all that. So I compliment whoever made the decision to just leave this as a good roll-up-the-sleeves work session with the public providing input.
I would agree with that. I've been to many of the workshops and the ones where there have been recordings. It tends to be a little inhibitive. It brings out specific people as opposed to the general population. And I think an informal workshop with as few city officials there makes a lot of sense, because then they can get honest input from the members of the community. And that's what this commission is all about. So that, Director Frace, if we...
Chairperson?
Oh.
I'd just like to add to that.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yeah, and the reason why I was asking the director about the communications of the hearings is, for me, it was more of one of getting it firsthand. And that's why I prefaced, you know, about whether we could attend the meeting and would there be a problem with the quorum. And then if that was a concern, then what was the next available resource to me that I could hear what went on and get that uninhibited point of view, which I do agree with. I mean, that is an excellent point of view. Some people are intimidated by it, but for me it was...
I understand the point you're making about how having the camera or the recording going, or if it's a stenographer, all that taking place on the record does become sometimes an inhibiting factor or even a distraction, but... and it can interfere with getting things done. The thing is here, what are we trying to get done? We're trying to get public input so that we on the Planning Commission and members of the City Council can take in that public input and reflect it in what we do. And how are we going to find out what that input is I think the question you were raising and that I'm concerned about too. I wish there were a record. I know that the staff is going to do a good job in reporting to us what happened, but there's only so much they can do along those lines. It would be nice if we could somehow know what happens exactly during this meeting, and it would be even better if it's a meeting that's conducted without inhibition as well. So I don't know how we balance those two things. But they are somewhat competing interests here, and it raises a problem.
Yes. Commissioner Benz?
Yes. I can deal with it either way, either with the recording or without the recording. The City Council is the one that makes the decision on whether or not the meetings are going to be televised or recorded, and they appropriate the money for it, and they keep it within their purview. I respect everyone's opinion here on this commission. It's just that I've learned throughout the years to be able to just deal with whatever the cards are dealt to me and do the best that I can based on what people are willing to give in order to see how government works. So I can deal with it either way. It's just that... unfortunately for us, the City Council makes a decision, and we have to live with it.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Moreno?
And taping aside, we do have the issue of the quorum and, you know, not needing to notice and all of that. So if we do want to come to a consensus, if there are three people that would really like to go and the other four say either I can't attend or go ahead, you know, maybe we could have that kind of consensus here. And it sounds like maybe you are particularly. Okay.
Okay.
Show of hands.
Could you wear a wire?
Just. And Commissioner Ward.
Well, I'd like to go, but, you know.
Sounds to me like you've got the ability to fill a third shoe.
We should all show up. I don't mind sitting back there and just listening.
No. Well, it's okay. You're number three.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so as we understand it here, Commissioner Schmidt, Commissioner Benz, and Commissioner Ward will be the three that will be attending the workshop, and the rest of us will wait for staff's report. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. And it'll be a kibitzing roll only.
Very good.
Yeah, just to clarify, it's fine to have the three attend. We would ask that you don't participate in any other function than just listening so you don't end up skewing it all, or also impacting your ability to make decisions later when it comes before you for a decision.
Thank you.
I won't be wearing a wire.
Are there any commissioner comments or reports?
Yes, I do.
Commissioner?
I would like to start by congratulating Vice Chair Marino on how she ran the meeting last time when Commissioner Jack wasn't here. She did an excellent job. And it was a short meeting. We had a contentious moment, and I thought that she artfully dealt with that issue and passed it on to staff, and they answered some of the questions that needed to be answered, and she dealt with it really well and did a great job. And next, I brought some photographs I'd like to share with you people. The fellow commissioners, get them up there. There we go. Kind of hard to see. Here's the Schmidt Garden right here, and you can see to the left there is some onions and some garlic, and then the corn in the middle. There's some.
When are we going to be invited to
Armenian
the harvest?
Armenian cucumbers to,
I want
to
a barbecue.
The right, which were purchased at Moore's Nursery. Can I have the next slide, please? This is from the other side. There's tomatoes and some eggplant along the left. Along the back fence is some berries that I just love and some pumpkins just in front of that. Next slide, please. This is Xena, the warrior princess, and Angie. And Angie is a pygmy goat that actually was kitted on our property 16 years ago. They're my politically correct mulching machine. You just throw it over the fence, and they take care of it. Next. A good dog, though. And so I just wanted to let you see what's going on at the Schmidt household.
I'd like to bring some pictures of my kids next week.
And I'll bring cats the following.
No, please, give me a break. Let's restrain ourselves a little bit on this. I mean, a little humor here and there is definitely beneficial to the mental atmosphere here. The mental health, yeah. Okay. So anyone else? Commissioner Ward?
I got some pictures of a lot of dead grass, but I'm doing my bit for the water conservation.
Model citizen over there.
I just wanted to make that note.
Okay, I think with that, the next item is the director's report.
Yes, thank you. Your next meeting will be on June 16th, and we're going to throw you a little bit of a change up for this meeting. So we're proposing to start the meeting at 6 o'clock. We have a hearing item that we have to handle that just came up. So we want to do a 6 o'clock Planning Commission meeting, then we'll adjourn that meeting and then reassemble at 7 o'clock for our housing element workshop. We're going to have a joint session with the City Council at 7 o'clock. So it's actually technically a City Council meeting, so we'll have both the Commission and Council there. Our housing consultant, Lisa Wise, will be here. We'll be sending out notices and encouraging the public to attend, and she'll be walking the Commission and Council through kind of an overview, update, study session of all the issues related to our housing element update. So not only are we doing boutique events that week, we'll also be doing the housing element update. So it'll be a fairly busy week. Also keep in mind there's a fifth Tuesday in June, so if you're planning your holidays or vacation, just keep that in mind. And then the final thing is on the Walmart project. The City Council has authorized staff to hire a consultant to do the EIR. It's Michael Brandeman and Associates was selected. They were selected based on their experience. They have a lot of experience doing these kind of projects in the state. They also had the fastest timeline, and they had a price was kind of in the mid-range of everything that was submitted to the city. So those were the selection criteria that ended up pointing in their direction. So that concludes staff's report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Moreno?
Director Frace, I know that sometimes the city council during the summer
meeting, then we'll kill one.
Okay.
I have a question. The next Calamarino? Meeting starts at 6, then that's strictly the Planning Commission. There's one item that you expect to be on the agenda, then it'll be a public hearing, I guess.
Correct. There's a zone change. We think it's going to be fairly quick and easy, but we'll do that at 6, and we'll adjourn, then we'll reassemble for the joint session.
And the joint session will be addressing what again?
The housing element update.
And that'll take up the entire joint session?
Yeah, that's all the joint session's about. We figure that's about a two-hour meeting item.
Thanks.
Okay. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting.